Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams. Keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Hey, folks. Welcome to the Community Alert. Taking off here this morning, and I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and today we're going to be talking with Chief Ben Hose, who is a retired division chief with the State Fire Marshal's Office of the State of California. He'll be talking to us about how he arrived in this country and a fascinating story about how it all unfolded, how he left Vietnam, and how he made it to the United States.
Well, Chief, thank you very much for taking time out to be with us. A couple of quick announcements. Last week's guest, Ethan Turpin, Burn Cycle opens in conjunction with UCSB Reed's 2014 book, The Big Burn by Teddy Roosevelt and The Fire That Saved America by Timothy Egan, and the Benn School of Environmental Science and Management's new research initiative, Wildfire's Relationship to the Climate Change. Turpin will give his artistic talk at 4 p.m. tomorrow, February 19th, at the Mary Cheaters Room, third floor of the library. Reception will follow. Again, this will be tomorrow. We interviewed him last week. Great guest. And we're trying to get the Big Burns author on also.
Yes.
A couple of things from Santa Barbara County Fire Department. Weed control and defensible space. Now is the time to create and maintain defensible space at least 100 feet or greater around each building structure on your property. To preserve single specimens or groupings and well-spaced and well-pruned trees and other vegetation. And to eliminate ladder fuels within defensible space zones, disrupting the vertical and or horizontal continuity of plants. For this and further information on how you can prevent your house from being destroyed by fire, visit sbcfire.com, sbcfire.com. Announcement regarding red flag alerts. If you're interested in getting red flag alerts on your cell phone, visit their website, sbcfire.com, or go to red flag at 888-777. That's 888-777 on your cell phone, and it'll automatically send those to you. But again, visit the website, sbcfire.com, for further information. Also on their website, drought conditions worsen for sections of California. It would be wise for folks living in the urban interface to catch up on what's going on in the water world and how that's impacting on our fire service. Again, that's sbcfire.com. Well, Chief, thank you very much for taking out the time to be with us. How's retired life?
It's very good so far.
Well, everybody I know that's officially retired says they're busier in retirement than they are when they were on the job, and I suspect the same will hold true for you.
Yes, I enjoy a little break, and then I'm going to decide what I'm going to do after retirement. So.
Well, outstanding.
I had the privilege of attending your retirement last month in Sacramento, and you told a remarkable story in your presentation, and I said, I have got to get Ben on our show to talk about it to the public. And so I'm going to kind of turn the radio over to you today. What happened in your life that got you to where you are today?
Okay. First of all, I want to say thank you for the opportunity. It is an honor for me to have the interview today, and my story is kind of private, and I have not tell my story to a lot of people, and so today I'm going to tell it to the audience, and I hope that I won't bore you with it. My journey to America started out in 1979 when I was 17 years old, and this is right after the end of the Vietnam War, and there's a lot of political refugees left the country by boat. And as many of us know, as a boat people. So my journey started in 1979. We left southern Vietnam, and we was on the South China Sea for about 6 days. And the first 3 days is floating around the South China Sea because we got lost, and we ran out of water, and the engine started to break down. And then after the third day, we were picked up by a merchant ship, and that ship took us to Thailand. So the entire journey was 6 days. We reached Thailand in 1979, and I spent about 3 months in the refugee camp there. And when we get to refugee camp, we apply to go to any country that take us in. And I was fortunate enough to get accepted by the United States. And that's how my journey became. I came to Porterville, California, right after the 4th of July. And when I get there, I didn't speak any English. I was 17 years old, didn't know anything. Didn't have any, parent. I went by myself. So I got a job there. I was sponsored by the U.S. Catholic Conference, and it took us to Porterville. Two weeks later, when I get to Porterville, I got a job at the grocery store, and since I didn't have any skill set, I didn't speak any English, so I got a job at the bag grocery and then a janitor to mop the floor at that supermarket. But that first job get me to go to school and, provide me my future. So that's how it start with my first step here in America. And then I go to high school. Mainly I learn English. You come to this country, if you don't speak English, you can't do anything. I mean, that's my philosophy. So I went to school. Right after high school, I go to work there and then save money. And then later on, I moved to Sacramento and go to college up here. Wow. So right after I finished college, I got a job with the state fire marshal. And at that time, they need an engineer to work in the listing program and, help out in the lab. So that's how I got the job. And, I was a starving student. So I take any job that I can. Did not realize that I should open my door to a great career in the fire service. And that's how I start. I work my way up. And after 23 years with the State Fire Marshal Office, I retire. So here I am.
Outstanding.
Well, backing up a little bit, what caused you to leave Vietnam? Were you forced out, or was that a decision you made because?
Well,
you...
after the fall of Saigon, and we live in the South, which is under the South Vietnamese government. So anybody associate with the South Vietnamese government, which is pro-American, my family especially, we cannot go to school. So my dad was taken away, and he spent 13 years in prison for serving in the South Vietnamese government. And we have no future there, so my mom decided to send us to the U.S. And at that time, she had to send one by one because with the fear that, if something happened to the boat, all her children can be gone.
Correct.
And we have a family of eight, so, we all went separate ways.
Well, it sounds like your journey was, you were actually pretty fortunate to only be at sea for 6 days.
Well, normally it take about six to 10 days, depend on where you go and how far you go.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to a refugee camp, you stay there for, some of them stay up to 5 years. I was lucky. I only stayed for 3 months. So.
Well, we're going to take our first break. We're going to come back and get into some of the details, particularly about your schooling and the family you lived with. Talking today with retired Division Chief Ben Ho on Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board for us. Community Alert, not if but when, positive preparation for disaster. Live on the Internet at newspress.com on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Chief Ben Ho, retired division chief of the State Fire Marshal's Office, telling us his story of being a boat person coming out of Vietnam in the late 70s and how that all came about to bring him to where he is today. Mike.
Well, Chief, going back into your college days, you got your degree in engineering. What motivated you to go into that field?
Well, I guess it's, came to this country, I did not speak any English. So I look around and say, what is the major that I can do with the least amount of English? And so that's why I pick engineering. I have no idea.
Very good.
Math is math. Well, so I guess that's pretty.
Well, it's a wise way to do it, yeah.
So when you were going through the university, what type of career were you looking at getting into? Because you kind of ended up in a very unusual pocket.
Well, I mean, right after I graduate, I applied for several jobs. I try to get a job with Caltrain,
mm-hmm.
and State Fire Marshal. There's a job opening. They're looking for an engineer, so I applied for everything, and the State Fire Marshal called me for an interview first. And I took that interview, and I got hired. Then I took that job.
Outstanding.
But like I say, without knowing that I get into a wonderful career.
Well, obviously you're a great success at it, and I think that you've been a great asset to the community by your endeavor.
I'd like to get into, if I may, the story about the family that adopted you and your brother and provided you with a lot of the opportunities and opened up doors, because that in and of itself is an interesting story, what this family did.
Well, I first of all, when I went to Thailand, I did not get accepted to go to the U.S. because I don't have any immediate family to sponsor me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was selected to go to Holland, and I have no idea what my future is going to look like if I went to that country.
Right.
So there was a family that I stayed in the camp, and he went to school in the U.S., so he can write English pretty well. So he offered to help. He said, hey, you have any relative in the U.S.? I said, yes, my aunt. So he wrote a letter to the U.S. Embassy, and then he said that he has, I have my aunt here, and she's willing to support me financially, and my aunt did not know anything about that. So with that, I got accepted to the U.S. I came to Porterville. I stayed with my aunt for the first few months, and she's the one who provides shelter and guidance. And my uncle was at my retirement dinner, and that's my aunt Van Lee and Dak Dong, and I owe that a lot to them. And then during that time, I stayed with my aunt, and I got a job, and I, get on my own. Then I went to high school. And at the high school, my high school teacher was Mrs. Joy Frost, and she also at the retirement dinner. And, she kind of feels sorry for me because I didn't speak any English. So mm-hmm. she paid more attention, tried to teach me English, so we got real close and, later on, my two other sisters came, and they were also in her classes. We get real close and then try to save money from college, so they asked us to kind of move in with them. So we did, and ever since, I consider them as my American parents.
Well, they're terrific people. I met them, and just a phenomenal story that they told that night about what it was like, because they were kind of running in the blind themselves. But you were in high school. You were a little older than most of the other kids at the time. Was that awkward, or did you able to move in pretty easily?
It's first pretty odd, because I was 17. So by the time I signed up, I'm 18.
Right.
And 18, you don't get to go to high school.
Right.
But in my case, they make the exception. So they allow me to go to high school, but mainly I learn English there. because I all the high school math and physics and chemistry, I already know how to, you know, I already took it.
Okay.
So and, did they give you placement tests and that sort of thing to figure out where in the system you would fit properly?
Actually, I didn't get to go to that, but actually they put me into some algebra class, and I told the teacher that I know this stuff. So he opened the book, he picked a problem, I solve it. Anything he point, I solve it. So he say, nope, you don't need to be here. So they took me to another class, you know.
Oh, I see. That's interesting.
And I did not graduate from high school because I'm too old, number one. Number two, it's kind of wasting my time there.
Right.
So after, I think that couple years in high school, they suggest that, you know what, you're old enough, you can go to college.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I move on.
Perfect. Where did you go to a college in Porterville? Is there a college there that you...
Yes, the first year there, but then I transferred to Sacramento State.
I see. Super.
Well, when you got into the State Fire Marshal's office, was it what you expected as far as engineering goes, the type of projects that you engaged in?
Not a clue. you know, starving college student looking for a job, and went for the interview, got my first job, show up to work, and, you know, find out from that point and learn everything from scratch there. And, you know, I liked the job a lot.
Now, your brother came over and he went to medical school, correct?
That's correct. He came 2 months after I came to the U.S., so we get together, we stay together, and he worked at the same place. And there's a supermarket called Town & Country in Porterville. And my brother, myself, and my two sisters, we all went there, we worked there, and that first job right there make a big difference in the outcome of our lives. So my brother, yeah, he went there, he worked there, and then he went to college, he went to UC Davis, and then he moved on, and he became a medical doctor and then a surgeon. So he is a professor at UC Davis right now.
So it must have been a great asset to keep the family together like that, and so you had your own support group, which must have been really important at that time.
Yes. You know, this is all we have, so we all stick together, and we stay together throughout the years. And then later on, when we move on, go to college, then that's when we part. And then, you know, we move on with our career and get married. And
sure.
So now, you know, our family is all over the country.
It sounds like the story from where you're telling it, how you're telling it, sounds as if the people of Porterville were very receptive to you folks, and you didn't run into any problems in that area. Although there must have been some along the line, but it sounds like overall they were pretty receptive.
Yes, they was pretty nice to us.
Yes, that's fortunate.
And then, you know, we stay in Porterville, I believe, like 3 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of my time I spend up here in the Sacramento area.
How long did it take you to become comfortable speaking English?
That was tough because you can see I still have the accent.
Well, you've got the vocabulary and you've got the verbs. I mean, you've got all the rudiments. So, I mean, the accent is not important, really. You're able to express yourself very well.
Yeah, it was really difficult at first because, number one, I don't learn it from school. I learn it when I work at that Town & Country market.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear of people not understand you, that's the most challenge, you know, when I speak English, because that fear come into my head before I open my mouth. You know, it took me a long time to overcome that.
Yeah, it gets in the way of the whole communication flow. As
right.
If you're
Even
anxious.
So, you know what to say. Later on when you learn English, but you're afraid to say it.
Yes, I think that's true of anyone speaking a foreign language, but when you have to communicate, it's very difficult.
Right. It was difficult, and then for a long time, I, you know, spoke with spoken English, you know, and not proper.
Mm-hmm.
But then people helped me, and I don't take it a negative way. When people say something, sometimes they're making fun of me, too.
Right.
But I take it as a lesson learned, so I correct it. And it took a long time. It took a long time.
Well, I think it's probably, well, English is not an easy language to learn because there are so many forms of it that when they're the written language and the spoken language, it's similar to French in my understanding because you can read the words in French, but the people speak it so differently. And I think we do the same thing here with English. And someone coming with no knowledge at all, it makes it very difficult to get beyond that.
And the truth is everybody speaks English now, so...
Yes, it's much easier now. Actually, I visit France because I've got a daughter living there, and it's much different than it was.
But you were engaged in an occupation, engineering, and then ultimately getting into the fire service where there's a lot of reading required, and that had to have been challenging.
Right, but by the time I got my college degree, then that's not a challenge any longer.
Right.
I can read, I can write, and I can speak, so... Believe it or not, I went to that interview. There were 622 people apply for that job.
Wow.
And then only 22 made it, and I made it, and I was so happy.
That's incredible.
And I could not believe it. I made the cut. So.
Did you read anything other than, did you read English fiction or anything like that in order to give you a conversant idea of what the English language was about in reading?
No, actually, mainly from reading the textbook mm-hmm. when I went to college.
Okay, very good.
And at that time, it would be easier now with, you know, phone and computer and stuff like that. When I went to college, I didn't have a computer. Everything, you have to type.
That's right.
When you do a term paper, you write it first and then you type it. So, you know, that helped a lot.
Exactly.
We're up to our next break, visiting today with just retired Division Chief Ben Ho from the California State Fire Marshal's Office, telling his story coming over from Vietnam at the age of 17 on Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio. We'll be back after these messages.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we're visiting with Chief Ben Ho, who's the Division Chief, State Fire Marshal's Office, just recently retired, talking about his experience as a boat person coming out of Vietnam in the late 70s and all the things that he experienced when he got to this country and how he actually achieved a lot of life goals and tremendous job.
Well, Chief, I do you think as the environment that you grew up in prior to coming to the United States helped you in some ways of being determined and focused and driven in a way that helped you when you got over here with the obstacles that were presented to you?
Definitely. And, you know, I've been through hardship before. And then when you come here, what I encounter here as a challenge or hardship compared to what I deal in the past, that was really nothing at all. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's really helped.
When you first got into the United States, what was your first impression? What caught your eye more than anything else? You said that was awestruck. It was a wonderment, if you will. What was it that really blew you away?
My experience was a little bit different, and you probably kind of laugh when you hear this, but we came to San Francisco, but we came in it at night. So they put me in a motel. And the next day, they fly me to Fresno. And then we get out of Fresno, and on the way from Fresno to Porterville, I see nothing but farmland. Nothing. It's not the America that I saw back home.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, what's wrong? Did they went to the wrong place? Okay. So then later on, but I afraid to ask, because I was expect New York City or San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Porterville, a lot of farmland there. And then later on, they say, no, the U.S. is so big. California is the size of Vietnam. So you just go to this small little town in Central Valley. Then they took me to San Francisco. Then that's when I see, oh, this is the one that I see back home, because back home, we see the Golden Gate, you know, the New York, all this high-rise and that kind of stuff. And, of course, Disneyland. So,
have you done any traveling since you've been here? Have you gone around the country much and seen different parts of the country?
Yes, I went to back east, you know, Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
and all that museum. I went to New York City. I went to Niagara Falls.
Okay.
And there's a lot of things to see in this country.
Oh,
what
boy.
A beautiful country.
Absolutely. So I'd just like to ask you a little bit about your life before you left Vietnam. Of course, it was in the middle of strife and a war and everything, but did you experience many problems while you were still living, but in your, you know, but from the time you were like 10 years old until 17 when you left? Was it a problematic time there, or was the problem that came right as you left and then what you experienced after being a boat person?
Well, I was too young during the Vietnam War. All I can see, all I saw was on TV and a few action because, you know, I live in Saigon, so most of the fighting is not in Saigon, except mm-hmm. the 1968, the Tet Offensive.
Right.
That I actually see, you know, action in with my own eye. But I was really too young, and then when the fall of Saigon, 1975, I was 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you expect from a 14 years old? Right.
Right.
I have no clue.
Of course.
And then I live under the communist rule for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I start experiencing the differences.
And that's when you understood it was a good idea to get out of there.
Right,
yeah.
Because, I mean, education is really important to us and to me, and I was denied of that. So, you know, all I wanted to do is go to school.
Yes.
And you don't get to do that. And then, you know, and...
So for
the future, you know, gotta go, gotta get out.
Well, you know, that's an interesting statement, because if I were to go out and right now outside and talk to 100 people, I don't think one of them would say, all I want to do is go to school,
mm-hmm.
or any variation of that. All I want to do is read and learn and participate in the learning process. I don't think anybody would say that. Do you, Ted?
Well, not of that age group, of
no.
course. I mean, if you look at the age group between, say, 14 and 18 years old, I think it's a totally different environment. And, of course, I think it's a different environment now than what we had in the late 70s, early 80s as well. It's hard to correlate what we've got today with what was going on at that time. But I don't think that the American public at that age is really striving to learn. I know that for myself, even, I had to get interested in something before I really was anxious to learn. And I didn't do very well in college at that time. I did much better later on in life when I went back to school because there were things that I really wanted to learn. But I didn't have those incentives when I was young. And I think that's something that's different between Chief Ho's life and our life here, because I think in this area that the young really want to learn, and I don't know that we have that in this country.
Chief, why do you think that is? Why do you think folks from other countries, or your own experience in particular, you were so focused on the desire to learn at such an early age?
Well, let's take my kids, for example. They're born and raised in this country. And I would say, you know, they got everything for them here. So unless someone take that away, deny you of something, then that will trigger you to want it to do it.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's
so
a good point.
Right now, a normal kid grow up in this country got opportunity to go to high school, college. Everything is out there available for them. All they need to do is just go and get it. Until someone take that away, then, you know, everybody gonna think like the way I used to think 30 some years ago. I want to do it because someone denied me of something. So
I think that's important. That's an interesting point, and I think it's really valid that many times we don't miss what we have until we lose it, and then when
right.
we lose it, then we're driven to regain
Correct.
It, and I think that's very important.
I was thinking, well, what was I thinking when I was 17 years old? And
I know what I was thinking, but I wouldn't be anything I'd be putting out.
I wasn't focused so much on education as I wanted to go to work. I
mm-hmm.
realized that freedom required working, and that was just the reality of it. So I was focused on that because I've been working since I was 11 and a half years old.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where my energy was, and I certainly can't go back and repeat that. But I think Ben took the better approach. He focused, and I'm curious as to what that was, and I suspect because of my upbringing and the availability of stuff, and then nobody took anything. We weren't for want for anything.
Well, I think that, I mean, from my standpoint, that knowledge, from knowledge comes freedom. I mean, you have freedom to make good decisions, freedom to choose what you want to do, your path. If you come from a point of no knowledge, then you're always without the information that you might need to make those good decisions, and then you become involved in things that kind of are trapping you.
Yeah, well, then, you know, my dad always say education is a ticket for everything.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I came over here, I always think about what my dad always say, and I, you know, did not want to let him down. So.
Well, we're coming up to our next break here, and we're visiting today with Division Chief, just retired, Ben Ho from the California State Fire Marshal's Office on Community Alert, live on the Internet at newspress.com. It's KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio on Community Alert. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we're visiting with Chief Ben Ho, who was a division chief of the State Fire Marshal's Office up until recently when he retired, and he's talking with us about his experience coming out of Vietnam in the late 70s as a refugee and a boat person, and how he succeeded in this country to be good where he is today. And really interesting story, Mike.
Well, we were talking during the break about the differences between the United States and other countries, and that we pretty much, for the most part in this country, don't want for anything. And Ben brought up, and I'd like to elaborate on that, one of the great differences with the United States to most other countries is that no matter who you are, for the most part, everyone has equal access to the roads, the grocery stores, the restaurants, the services, police, fire, public works, the hospital system, and whatever. There's variations of all of that, but you don't see that elsewhere in the world. Chief, could you expand on that a little bit, what your experience and observations are?
Well, in other country, especially, you know, where I came from, the difference between the rich and the poor, there's a huge gap there. And what we do well here is we have the middle class in America, and everybody here have the same opportunity to compete and to chase the American dream. And you know, if you look at that in another country, it's not so much opportunity.
So you see the opportunity that we present as probably being one of our greatest assets as a country?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I can use my example. I mean, I came here with nothing. And, you know, I don't have any right to be here. But I was fortunately enough that, you know, the American people take me in and provide me a home. They fed me at first. But I got to do something. I mean, I don't come here just to suck on the system and get on welfare. And welfare is just, you know, designed for people really need it for a short time so they can get back on their feet. So with that, you know, I told myself that I'm going to have to do something. I got to do something to pay back this country. And the only way to do that is, you know, get an education and go to work.
Well, I think one of the great assets that you had was inspiration and the drive to do it. Plus, you were blessed with a good mind, you know, and you were able to overcome a lot of things that would have held a lot of people back simply because you were so inspired, and I think that's a great asset.
Well, this family that you lived with, I had the pleasure of meeting with them. They are remarkable people, and their lives changed tremendously too, and I think the opportunities that you were blessed with are rather remarkable. And how do we make that more accessible to other people that are trying to get into this country today? Because while we don't have a Vietnam, we have other countries that are in civil war that are fleeing their countries and trying to come here where there's opportunity. What can we do to help them?
Well, I don't know what can we do, but I think there is a lot of nice people in this country, a lot of nice people. And everyone that I met and encountered with, they're all nice people. There's only a few bad ones. but majority, they're really nice. And if they, if you can show that, you know, you really appreciate it, people will come and help you. And, you know, Joyce and Richard is a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Stranger that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to do it. But they went out the extra, you know, to help us. So, you know, that's how I see it.
Well, I think some of the that sort of thing has its own reward, you know, to be able to help someone and see them succeed and know that your helping was a great part of their success, I think is a wonderful thing. So I think that more people need to understand that it's not simply about the financial remuneration, but it's the emotional remuneration, and sometimes it's more valuable than that financial part.
Well, you also had the good fortune of getting hired into the fire service, which is a family of families of its own, and they definitely take care of their own. And what great opportunities that had to afford you.
Actually, your comment is correct. I mean, you know, Cal Fire, State Fire Marshal is a great department to work for, and they did take care of me. I mean, this is my only job for the last 23 years.
Right.
You know, I had the opportunity this last weekend. I was sponsoring a class down in San Diego for the Bomberos. It was on radiological response. So we had a couple guys there from the Department of Energy. Everyone in the class had come from Mexico, and they can't take these kinds of classes in Mexico because it's too unsafe, and we can't get the instructors down. There's just lots of logistical issues, so we bring them into San Diego. And the stories that some of these folks told were not unlike yours, where they want to come up, they want to learn, they want to participate. The journeys that some of these folks had to take, which some of them were from far south of Mexico City, takes days to get into the United States.
Wow.
To take a class. And unlike classes that are taught here for our folks, these folks started at 8 o'clock and they stayed till 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And they took the class, and they actually did the full 16 hours, and they actually took the tests, and they did all of that. And it was so rewarding to watch because these people actually wanted to be there, and they were paid the dues to be there. And it was a privilege to be able to get it available to them without them having to spend any money and take care of their housing and what have you. So when I thought of your comment about all you wanted to do was go to school and learn, there are people all over the world that's what they want to do, even within the fire community. And there must be a way that we can better enhance that to make it more available. What would you like to suggest for people that would like to help immigrants coming into this country? Any suggestions that you might have that organizations they could become part of that would help others?
Well, I mean, all the immigrants come here, they all need help.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, depending on, you know, what all kind of help that they need. And if opportunity available, I would encourage people to provide it out there and extend the hand. And how to reach them, I don't know. I don't know how do you do that. But really, it make it available to charity, you know, to community service and some free classes. People will come, you know, if it doesn't cost them anything, teach them how to do a trade, teach them how to speak English, teach them how to, you know, find a job, that kind of stuff. That's really help, because that's what we're looking for. I mean, for my experience, all I need to do is learn English first.
Exactly.
And then, you know, somebody helped me to find a job. Somebody guide me to where to go to school, that kind of stuff. And with that help from the initial, you know, when they first got here, it made a big difference.
Yes.
Well, we're coming up to our next break, and when we come back, I'm just curious of any closing thoughts and a little bit about your career with Cal Fire, because after 23 years, you had quite the career. That's a long time. We're visiting today with just now retired Division Chief Ben Ho from the California State Fire Marshal's Office, part of Cal Fire, on Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the clocks for us on Community Alert, not if, but when, positive preparation for disaster. Live on the internet at newspress.com on KZSB AM 1290.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the last segment of the show. This is Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we've been visiting and really an interesting talk with Chief Ben Ho, Division Chief, State Fire Marshal's Office, who just recently retired, telling his story about how he arrived in this country from Vietnam at 17 years old as a boat person and all the things that transpired that brought him to where he is today.
Well, Chief, we only got a couple minutes left. I'm curious, in your 23 years with the Fire Marshal's Office, what do you consider your greatest achievements?
I would say customer service. What I did with the Fire Marshal Office was provide customer service, and I'm really proud of that achievement. I got a lot of recognition from the industry, from the public, and from the fire services. So that is my greatest achievement.
And, you know, that's an amazing achievement to have accomplished, because when you look at the bureaucracy of so much of state government and the inability of the consumer or the people on the outside trying to work with the people on the inside, and, of course, vice versa, trying to do compliance and what have you, it's difficult to do that. What do you think? How do you think that became your asset, though? It's just your cultural background that you were much more easy around people than perhaps some of the folks that are just more bureaucratic by nature?
Well, I guess it's a part of it is culture, but I believe that, you know, if someone pay me to do something, I need to produce what they pay. And I always put myself in their shoe, you know, if I'm on the other side of the, you know, the equation, what would I do? So I want to provide a service of what they pay me to.
Very good.
Well, thank you very much for taking time out to visit with us today. Do you have any closing thoughts before we go?
Yes, I want to take, first of all, this opportunity to thank you, the American people, for helping me, for supporting me for the last 30-some years. And this is a great country. It is my country now. I'm really proud of this country. And I want to deeply thank you, everyone that helped me along the way and helped me with during my career. And it's my pleasure to be on the show today. Thank you.
Well, Chief, thanks you're so very much. Welcome. Thank you. Talking today with just retired California Division of Forestry, Cal Fire Division Chief Ben Ho, who just came out of the California State Fire Marshal's Office. A remarkable story, Chief. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
Yeah, very interesting. It's great to talk with you.
Thank you.
A couple of quick little items here on the list. Next week, we've got an interesting guest coming in. It is going to be TalkRadioBuilder.com, Ken Swanson, out of the Redding Shasta area. That's TalkRadioBuilder.com. He'll be joining us. He does a similar show up in Northern California. He's more in the building construction industry, actually an area that Chief Ho was involved in quite a bit. And so we're going to have him on, and he wants to talk about how we've been doing things down here and try to get his program a little bit more established. And I also want to get Mr. Turpin's program out again. Burn Cycle, open in conjunction with UCSB Reed's 2014 book, The Big Burn with Teddy Roosevelt, and The Fire That Saved America by Timothy Egan at the Bren School for Environmental Sciences and Management, the new research initiative, Wildfire Relationship to Climate Change. Turpin will give the artist talk at 4 p.m. tomorrow, which is Thursday. Wednesday, on the 19th at Mary Cheadle Room. That'd be the third floor of the library. Reception will follow. There's further information available at library.ucsb.edu. So, again, that's tomorrow. And he was a great guest. We had him
really
on last week.
Really interesting guy. I'm going to go take a look at what he's put together. I think it's going to be an interesting show. I like the idea of using objects that have gone through the fire and turning them into art to show what fire can do.
Yeah, if you're interested in that interview, it was last week. You're available at wildlandresidents.org. Go to the Community Alert tag on the left-hand side. You click on that. Actually, all 5.5 years of Community Alert's available there. But we just posted
listen to
that.
Them all, folks.
I don't think I want it to. Let's not get crazy. And a new website that we've just launched that we're going to talk more with the author about, Ronnie Coleman, is cafsti.net/tabletalk. That's cafsti.net/tabletalk. that has the writings, the books, recordings, individual interviews, and the past Community Alert shows with former State Fire Marshal Ronnie Coleman, building quite a
Very
library
good.
Up in there. So that's coming up along with a couple other websites shortly. But until then, time is up. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan on Community Alert. Thanks again to Chief Ho for joining us. Until next week, not if but when, positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290. The news is next. We'll see you next week.
So long, folks.
This has been Community Alert, not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams. Community Alert is produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, and sponsored by the California Fire Safe Council. Technical support for Community Alert provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when. On KZSB AM 1290, your news press radio station.